It is April the 12th, and this is Kathy bringing you the Pantograph for today. The top headline on the front page, Peers Praise Ryan's Legacy by Ryan Voiles. From Decatur, Central and Downstate Illinois Republicans in Congress on Wednesday heaped praise on outgoing House Speaker Paul Ryan, calling the Wisconsin Republican a great man who helped usher in legislative goals, including landmark tax reform. Ryan announced Wednesday he would not seek re-election in November, saying he would end his 20-year career to spend more time with his family. He denied that his decision was connected to an expected Democratic surge driven by opposition to President Donald Trump and the upcoming November elections. The announcement sent new ripples of uncertainty through a Washington, D.C. already on edge, and a Republican Party bracing for a rough election year. It also sent off speculation about who would become the next speaker, with possibilities including House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy of California and House Majority Whip Steve Scalise of Louisiana. A self-described huge Paul Ryan fan, U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, Republican of Taylorville, was uninterested in discussing his potential replacement on Wednesday. The three-term congressman said in a telephone interview that members of his party needed to focus their energy this year on maintaining their majority in Congress. "Anybody who comes to me to discuss running for speaker are getting my support," he said. "The discussion instead needs to be, how about we all keep the majority and work hard to make sure we have a good list of legislative accomplishments that we can talk to the American people about so that the Republicans remain in charge?" Ryan's announcement came as Republicans are bracing for a potential blue wave of voter enthusiasm for Democrats, who need to flip at least 24 GOP-held seats in November to regain the majority. Ryan, from Janesville, Wisconsin, was first elected to Congress in 1998. He was pulled into the leadership job by the sudden retirement in 2015 of Speaker John Boehner, who had struggled to control the chamber's restless conservative wing. On Wednesday, Ryan said he had no regrets after having accomplished a heck of a lot during his time in a job he never really wanted. He said fellow Republicans have plenty of achievements to run on this fall, including the tax cuts that Congress delivered, which have been his own personal cause and the centerpiece of his small government agenda. "I have given this job everything I have," Ryan said. Speculation over Ryan's future had been swirling for months. But as he dialed up colleagues and spoke by phone with Trump early Wednesday, the news stunned even the top allies. Ryan announced his plans at a closed-door meeting of House Republicans. Representative Mark Walker of North Carolina said an emotional Ryan choked up a few times trying to get through his remarks to colleagues and received three standing ovations. The father of three, Davis, whose 13th congressional district includes parts of Bloomington, Champaign, Decatur, Springfield, and the Metro East area, said he understood Ryan's personal reasons for stepping down, and that Ryan's focus on the importance of family and people back home has contributed to his success. Speaking on Wednesday, Davis said that he and other House Republicans met Ryan for lunch to talk about the decision and what Republicans must do over the next 7 months to make sure they still hold the House in 2019. "We reiterated how honored we were to serve with him," Davis said. He added that Ryan has promised to help Republican candidates this year, possibly by making campaign stops and helping to push legislation through Congress that Republican members can take back to constituents. Republican United States Representatives Adam Kinzinger of Chanahan, John Shimkus of Collinsville, Darren LaHood of Peoria, and Mike Bost of Murfreesboro all released statements on Wednesday praising Ryan's leadership and character. "Speaker Ryan is a good man, a true conservative, and a strong leader," said Kinzinger, who did not respond to a request for further comment. "He has done a lot for this country. He has made lasting impacts for the good of our economy, and we are beyond grateful for his service to this institution." LaHood, whose district includes parts of Bloomington, Normal, Peoria, Springfield, and Quincy, reflected on the Midwestern values he shared with Ryan and what he saw the party's effort to promote a positive agenda to improve the lives of families across the country. "His tenure as Speaker has been productive, and he has served the position honorably," LaHood said in a statement. Shimkus thanked Ryan in a statement for serving in a tough and thankless job. In his relatively brief speakership, Ryan led the passage of historic tax reform and legislation to rebuild our military, said Shimkus, whose 15th congressional district stretches from Rantoul to the southern tip of Illinois and includes part of the Metro East. Bost, whose district encompasses much of southern Illinois, also praised Ryan's leadership. Speaker Ryan led the People's House through impactful times, including passage of historic tax reform legislation that will benefit working families for years to come, he said in a statement. This next article is accompanied by quite a few pictures. Rotary members and volunteers plant trees. Paul Anderson, a member of Sunset Rotary Club, and volunteer Marty Siegel planted a Baroque tree on West Market Street near the I-55/74 entrance ramp on Wednesday. The planting of 46 new trees is the second phase of a major planting project for the Sunset Gateway along West Market Street. The trees are paid for by a district Rotary grant, matched by contributions from members of the Rotary clubs who are hoping to plant 1 million trees worldwide this year. Joe Grable, a member of the Sunset Rotary Club, planted a tree Wednesday along West Market Street. The project is co-sponsored by the Bloomington Parks Recreation and Cultural Arts Department staff, Sunset and Daybreak Rotary members, and a group of downtown supporters organized by Pamela Eaton. The project continues on Thursday, and volunteers can meet at 9 a.m. at the Mount Pisgah Baptist Church parking lot at the corner of Allen and Market Streets. Cornell, Next President of Heartland by Lenora Sabota. A Wisconsin college administrator has been selected as Heartland Community College's next president. Keith Cornell, Executive Vice President, Chief Student Services Officer at Madison Area Technical College in Madison, Wisconsin, is expected to take office in July, pending a contract approval at the board's April 17th meeting. His base salary will be $220,000. He will succeed Bob Widmer, who is retiring June 30th after more than 20 years at Heartland. He served as president since June 2013. Cornell was among four finalists for the position. Board Chairman Greg Chadwick said all four were strong candidates that would have brought something good to the college, but Keith rose to the top of the pack fairly early in the process. Among Cornell's strengths were his broad experience and his personal style, said Chadwick. He described Cornell as a competent, down-to-earth guy, well-regarded by his peers for being a collaborative leader. At Madison College, Cornell oversaw student services for its four regional campuses and two metro campus locations. He has 32 years of experience in higher education, including 18 at Madison College. Chadwick said, coming from a larger, more complex institution, Cornell brings experience that will benefit Heartland as it looks to its future. The board wanted to find someone who would honor what's been done, but also bring a fresh perspective and new ideas, Chadwick said. Cornell said Heartland is an outstanding institution in a thriving community. In an interview after his selection was announced, Cornell said he is looking forward to meeting with people, getting to know folks, and seeing how together we can move the college forward to its greatness. He said during his visit to the college, he found it to have an outstanding faculty and outstanding staff that are committed to the students. The strategic plan recently adopted by the college provides an excellent framework, he said. Resources are tight in higher education, Cornell admitted, but we can't let that be a limitation for us. We have to leverage those resources. Those resources include the people at the institution and in the community, not just financial resources, he said. A large portion of the students served by Heartland are 18 to 24, Cornell noted, but he said the school also needs to look at what it can do for those 25 and older, how it can help them get the skills they need for their career pathways, and how they align with Heartland's transfer programs. Cornell intends to thank Widmer for providing such a strong foundation at the college and said he is looking forward to working with Doug Minter, Vice President of Business Services, who was among the finalists for president. Cornell is no stranger to the area. An Illinois native, he grew up in Glen Ellen. A sister worked at and a brother attended Illinois Wesleyan University, and his father has lived in Mount Zion for about 20 years, and a sister lives in Decatur. He and his wife, Felicia, are excited to become part of the Bloomington Normal community, Cornell said, and have found the people they have met to be very hospitable, warm, and kind, and that's important to us. Harmon grants available from Normal. The town of Normal is seeking applications for arts-related projects, programs, or events to be funded through the Harmon Arts Grant Program. Application deadline is May 10th. The form is available at www.normal.org. This year's grants are for programs or events taking place between July 1st, 2018 and June 30th, 2019, with priority given to programs within the town that make a program or event more accessible. Maximum grant award is $5,000. Committee members will make recommendations to the Normal Town Council, which will select grantees in June. And continuing in the first section, Unit 5 Mull's New Holiday by Julia Evelsizer. The idea of adding a new holiday to the school calendar to honor Indigenous people, a request first made by students, was discussed by the McLean County Unit 5 School Board on Wednesday. This semester, several students have attended board meetings to ask the district to replace Columbus Day with Indigenous Peoples Day. After examining the state school code and speaking with members of the Illinois State Board of Education, Unit 5 attorney Kurt Richardson said the district could not make that change, but other options were available. School code grants the board power to designate a commemorative holiday any day within a calendar year. The last Monday in September was designated by the General Assembly as Indigenous Peoples Day in Illinois, said Richardson. District spokeswoman Dana Brown spoke with the Unit 5 Citizens Advisory Council to discuss ideas for the holiday, whether it be celebrated on State Indigenous Peoples Day or on the day before Thanksgiving when students are out of school. Brown said that district officials plan to bring their findings to the students who originally came to the board to discuss options. I think it's important to go back to them rather than just have adults make decisions. They started this conversation, and I feel strongly that we need to continue to involve them as this debate evolves, she said. Board member David Fortner asked if there was a way to override the General Assembly's requirements for schools to honor Christopher Columbus, but Richardson said breaking that requirement could lead to consequences. The fact of honoring Columbus is a smack in the face to Indigenous people, said Fortner. Unit 5 Deputy Superintendent Ray Epperson said nearly every grade level includes curriculum to study Indigenous people, and the study of Columbus is not as extensive. If the students are still unhappy with the requirement to honor Columbus Day, board member Barry Hitchin said they should speak up to the lawmakers. As a school board, we will do what we can, but the people they really need to talk to are the Dan Bradys and the Jason Barrickmans of the world who can affect change in school code, said Hitchens, referring respectively to a state representative and a state senator, both Bloomington Republicans. The board expects to vote on the new holiday at a future meeting. In other business, the board received a transportation update from bus officials. Bus officials have worked with Cincinnati-based First Student, the district's busing contractor, to establish a customer service liaison to monitor customer concerns, increase communication, and boost on-time buses to 99% accuracy. The board approved the purchase of two new 34-passenger buses with wheelchair lifts and a space for multiple wheelchairs. At $64,521 each, the purchase will be funded with leftover transportation money made available by the $7 million in working cash bonds the board approved over the past 2 years. The last day for the 2017-18 year also was set for May 23rd. Students will attend school for 3 hours, beginning at regular start times with only breakfast available. This headline, Expert Says Complex Different from Arena, by Derek Bai. Experts studying a potential Twin City sports complex already are prepared to answer how the project would be different from the controversial Grossinger Motors Arena, formerly the U.S. Cellular Coliseum. The answer is that it's a totally different business model, said Evan Eliff, Chief Operating Officer of Sports Facilities Advisory, the Clearwater, Florida-based company hired at a cost of $47,000 to examine the concept. This is a participant-based type of complex, and that's a spectator complex. The people who actually went to see a concert at the arena, most of those are local, very little economic impact. However, VenueWorks, which manages the city-owned downtown Bloomington Arena, said the facility produced $1.48 million in local economic impact from November 1st to January 31st. In addition, 13 non-sports shows there over a year sold 49% of their tickets to Illinoisans outside McLean County and 26% outside the state, the Ames, Iowa-based area management company said. Officials hoped that a sports complex would draw regional and possibly national tournaments and events that would bring young athletes and their families from beyond McLean County for multiple-day visits, which would benefit hotels, restaurants, and retailers. Rockford's Mercy Health Sports Corps facility and Grand Park Sports Campus in Westville, Indiana, are often used as examples. Elif spoke about the comparison and the early details on the project during a stakeholder session on Wednesday that will lead to a report and a presentation before public officials in June or July. "We want to be able to say we're not going to be an annual burden. This is a very conservative approach. But if you invest in this, this is the return on investment you'll see," said Normal Parks and Recreation Director Doug Damery, who helped lead the session at Normal's Community Activity Center. "The City of Bloomington, the Town of Normal, and the Bloomington Normal Convention and Visitors Bureau are paying for the study." Elif said that the project is being discussed as a publicly built, owned, and operated facility, and it's likely the town would manage it. Elif said that SFA is approaching the project with four goals in mind: to bring in new spending from outside the community, measured as those who drive beyond a 90-minute drive, to strengthen Bloomington Normal as a regional destination, to stay fiscally sustainable, and to drive local quality of life. "I think there's a significant low-income population that's missing out on youth sports," said Bloomington District 87 Superintendent Barry Riley, one of several education officials to attend Wednesday's session. "To me, that would be important to be a part of this." Riley added he's concerned about the availability of private funding given other campaigns, including Bloomington Normal YMCA's fundraising for a new facility. Elif said that similar facilities are often public-private partnerships. Local soccer officials plan to raise money to replace the community field soccer facility on Central Illinois Regional Airport property in East Bloomington, whether it's a complex or another solution. "SFA is considering 14 sites," said Elif. "These have not been publicly identified. A Peoria-based developer is stumping for a $28 million sports complex on the community's west side. Rauner slams Pritzker, touts success at GOP dinner, by Derek By. In a room full of Republicans, Governor Bruce Rauner turned his attention to the November election on Wednesday, but he also took time to address a primary attack from conservative state representative Jeannie Ives. "This guy, he's a target-rich environment, and we're going to light him up in November," said Rauner of J.B. Pritzker, his Democratic opponent in the governor's race, during the McLean County Republican Party's annual Lincoln-Reagan Day dinner. "He's as corrupt a political insider as you can find." Rauner also took time to address Ives' claim that Rauner signed legislation to make Illinois a sanctuary state. He said law enforcement, in fact, asked him last summer to sign the Trust Act, which stops police from arresting residents based solely on their immigration status, because they feared Democrats would pass something more restrictive in its place. The attack was a centerpiece of Ives' campaign for governor, which came within 3 percentage points of defeating the better-funded and incumbent Rauner. "I am passionately against sanctuary states and against illegal immigration," he said Wednesday. Rauner also acknowledged how brutally hard his first term has been, laying the blame on Democratic House Speaker Mike Madigan of Chicago, but asked the conservatives stick with him in an election that many expect to be extremely favorable to Democrats, at least on the federal level. "Every election is important, but this one is essential, because we have a 2020 redistricting done after the census, and if Madigan is allowed to gerrymander it again, democracy is destroyed because we don't have competitive elections," he said. "We are going to work our tails off to try to pick up 9 seats in the General Assembly and knock Mike Madigan out as Speaker of the House." Rauner promoted what he has accomplished in his first term, saying he's helped cut $500 million in Medicaid fraud in addition to signing school funding reform, which passed the General Assembly despite his lobbying against it. He also criticized Pritzker's plan to implement a progressive income tax, which makes wealthier residents pay more, calling it a massive income tax hike, and attacked Pritzker's offshore holdings and questionable property tax practices. 4 other statewide candidates spoke Wednesday: Treasurer candidate Jim Dodge, Attorney General candidate Erica Harold, Secretary of State candidate Jason Helland, and Comptroller candidate Darlene Singer. Dodge and Singer said they hope to combine the offices of Treasurer and Comptroller. Wednesday was the last dinner under McLean County Republican Party Chairman Chuck Erickson. Connie Beard is expected to be elected as his successor on April the 18th. Headline reads, "More Time Given for Demolition," by Maria Nagel. The city on Wednesday gave a landlord more time to demolish a burned-out apartment building where city inspectors found 226 code violations 11 days prior to the February 10th blaze. Wayne Pelhank, the owner of the 12-unit building at 1101 Gettysburg Drive, initially was ordered on March 28th to obtain a demolition permit by April 4th, but the case was continued until Wednesday's administrative court hearing. Because some progress has been made, Assistant City Attorney George Boyle agreed Wednesday to give Pelhank until April 25th to complete demolition preparations. "Demolitions take time," said Boyle when he was asked following the hearing why another continuance was granted. He said several utility companies need to sign off, an asbestos inspection needs to be done, and a contract has to be signed with the demolition contractor all in the next 2 weeks. "They showed they've contacted a number of companies and done a lot of pre-demolition things," Boyle added. "There has been progress made." Pelhank has not appeared at any of the court hearings related to the case. Instead, his property manager, Ed Duran, and his attorney, Eaton Weltman, have appeared on his behalf. Weltman did not attend Wednesday's hearing. Duran did, but he declined to comment afterwards. An accidental cooking fire was the cause of the blaze that left seven families homeless and caused an estimated $650,000 in damage. The families have been relocated, some to other Pelhank-owned properties. A snow fence and a no-trespassing signs have been put around the site. The violations included smoke alarm problems, missing doors, windows that would not open, improperly installed doorknobs, damage from water leaks, and cockroach infestation. Because the apartment building was uninhabitable after the fire, those violations were deemed moot, but Pelhank was ordered to pay $110 in court costs. Pelhank and Duran also have racked up almost 600 violations at five apartment buildings that Pelhank owns in the 900 blocks of West Front and Grove Streets. The city says the pair are the worst offenders on a list of landlords whose properties violate the city code. The city agreed to decide those violations in four batches, of which Pelhank already has resolved two and a part of the third. The landlord will need to fix the remaining code violations by the third and fourth batches by May 4th. The city staff is still working on a proposed ordinance that the city council requested on March 12th to address chronically noncompliant landlords. The council's review of the city's rental inspection program was prompted by the fire and the large number of violations amassed by one landlord. No date has been set for the council to act on this measure. And now turning the page in the first section. BHS students object to Tiratilli dismissal by Lenore Sabota. The dismissal of science teacher Mark Tiratilli continues to prompt objections from the students. Two Bloomington High School students spoke on behalf of about two dozen students attending Wednesday night's Bloomington District 87 school board meeting, which took place at Stevenson Elementary School. They asked the board to reconsider Tiratilli's dismissal, which the board approved at its March 14th meeting, or at least change it from with cause to without cause. Junior Lucas Dom described Tiratilli as a phenomenal educator who's the best science teacher I've had. Speaking during the public comment session near the end of the meeting, Dom said, "I don't feel like I've been represented honestly by my school board." Savannah Slaver, a freshman, said students had planned a walkout for April 4th to protest Tiratilli's dismissal, but it was called off because of threats of punishment for truancy. She also pointed to a March 14th demonstration related to the school shootings in Florida, a protest she said was hijacked by the administration and turned from a walkout organized by students to a walk-in led by administrators that stifled dissent. She told the board that the firing of Tiratilli over the objections of students and others and the handling of the March 14th protest and the planned April 4th demonstration create an environment that renders students powerless. Superintendent Barry Riley said after a meeting that there are consequences for students who skip class, although the discipline would vary depending on such things as whether the students had been disciplined previously. However, Riley said he would talk to BHS Principal Tim Moore about the students' feelings that they are not being listened to. "We want to make sure students do feel like they can go to the building leader and be heard," said Riley. As for the students' desire that Tiratilli's dismissal be reversed, Riley noted that among the actions taken by the board Wednesday was the hiring of a new physics teacher, which means Tiratilli's position has already been filled. He said, "I can understand the frustration of someone who doesn't have all the information, but the district does not publicly disclose the reasons for dismissal in such cases, even at the expense of being viewed as not being forthcoming. The March 14th demonstration related to the school shootings also generated public comment from local blogger Diane Benjamin of Ellsworth. Benjamin said, "Although the demonstration was claimed to be about safe schools and remembering students, it was really about advocating gun control." She said a document that was handed out was copied on BHS equipment. Benjamin said, "You don't have the right to indoctrinate students." Riley said after the meeting that indoctrination wasn't the intent, but he also said that the copy should not have been made on school equipment, and he is talking to the administrators. "It's one of those lessons that you learn," Riley said. "In the future, that will not occur." False. Poverty gave perspective. Director of IWU Nursing honored by Lenore Sabota. The winner of Illinois Wesleyan University's 2018 Kemp Foundation Award for Teaching Excellence said that her own experience as a first-generation college student gives her a different perspective when dealing with students from similar circumstances. Victoria Fulce, professor and director of IWU's School of Nursing, said during her address at Wednesday's Honors Convocation that when a student doesn't complete an assigned reading or misses a deadline, she looks at that in a unique way. "I wonder, does she have the money to purchase books, or does his campus job combined with working an off-campus job during nights and weekends interfere with the student's ability to prioritize academics?" she said. "I ask myself, does this student have anyone at home to ask or the support needed to navigate a complex problem?" Fulce said that her parents divorced before she turned one, and she was raised by a single mother who relied on welfare. She now considers herself fortunate to have known poverty, because it provided the catalyst for excellence to fulfill her goal of a better life. It also led her to understand the story behind a person's behavior, whether it was a student in her classroom or a psychiatric patient she encountered as a nurse. "My soft skills were cultivated by life experiences," she said. "That included the resourcefulness needed in a family with no car and conflict resolution skills when persuading the phone company or electric company to accept a partial payment rather than cut off services." She recalled being punished at school for such things as not buying school supplies by the end of the first week of school. "I was once punished for buying rawhide necklaces with an embossed leather initial for a dime and selling them throughout school for between 50 cents and a dollar," she said. "Today we would call this entrepreneurship, but I clearly peaked before my time." Fulce went on to study nursing, getting her bachelor's degree in 1986 for IWU, where excellence was not optional, she said. That led to graduate school as well as nursing practice for Fulce, who, in addition to having a PhD in nursing, is a licensed clinical professional counselor, a clinical nurse specialist in adult psychiatric nursing, and an advanced practice nurse. She joined the IWU faculty in 2002 and became nursing school director in 2009. Her advice to students was to be authentic in your pursuits and to surround themselves with people who are equally committed and who share your values. She also encouraged them to lead by example, which will elevate the most vulnerable around you. The Kemp Foundation Award is presented each year at IWU in recognition of someone who brings spirit, passion, and scholarship to teaching. Fulce was the 45th recipient of the IWU Top Award for Teaching Excellence. At the conclusion of the Honors Convocation, the 2019 recipient was named. She is Carmela Faradans, Professor of Hispanic Studies. And today's Flick Fact. In Chicago, beginning tonight through Tuesday, comes the return of a former Bloomington Normal resident who, at a performance of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, will serve as narrator of Aaron Copland's Lincoln portrait of Central Illinois' most famous son, Abraham Lincoln, in the 200th year of Illinois. Do you know who that narrator is? And the answer? It's acclaimed actor, veteran Steppenwolf Theater Ensemble member, two-time Oscar nominee, Benton native, and former Illinois State University undergrad, John Malkovich. He once lived in a home in the southern wing of Normal, where the Auto Precision Car Wash at 1302 South Madison is today. And that's the end of Part 1. Please stay tuned. We will be right back with Part 2 of The Pantograph for today, April the 12th.